Before we begin the next chapter, I just want to thank you for all the amazing reviews you've written. They really warm my heart, give me the confidence I need, and help this show find new listeners. So thank you so much. And also thank you to all of my patrons. This show is commercial-free and will remain that way, but you can support my creative process by becoming a patron. Visit sonofelpodcast.com/support. It's only a little bit each month, but it makes a big difference, especially in helping me believe in myself. I love telling this story and appreciate you enabling me to keep telling it. So thank you, and enjoy the show. You're listening to Book 2 of Superman, Son of El. He is more than a story. He is more than a comic book superhero. He is more than a symbol of hope. He represents our greatest aspirations. He is everything we think we can be. And yet, even with all the strength and all the power in all of the world, he may not be able to meet his greatest challenges and redeem his family's legacy. For he is the Son of El. Chapter 2, The Harvest Ball. Clark and Lana only had a couple of weeks to get the Smallville Harvest Ball together, yet their desire to catch up with one another often took priority over the actual planning of the ball. At their first meeting in the auditorium, they discussed Lana's recent change in address and her move back to Smallville. Lana's body language was timid at first.
I've only been back a few weeks, but I've been pretty quiet about it. Keeping mostly to myself.
I'll say. You haven't even been coming around your parents' house.
Nah, they come to visit me. I try not to get out too much.
Are you doing okay?
Well, no, not for a while. Ted started acting kind of scary before we split up. So I've been trying to lay low, so to speak.
Does he live here in town? Do you have to avoid him?
No, that's not it. It's just, I don't know. My folks encouraged me to come down here and sign up for this. Did they know you'd be here?
I didn't tell them, but now that I think on it, it's pretty likely Martha mentioned it to them by now.
They must think they're so clever.
Oh, I don't mind them being clever. I'm glad to see you, and I'm glad they put you up to it. But I gotta ask, did they tell you about the rats?
Rats?
I don't know if you've heard, but we have a lot of work cut out for us.
Clark broke down the situation and Lana confessed it was too much for her to evict a colony of rodents. Compared to Clark, she didn't think she could be of any physical help, but suggested she could offer moral support. In the community center supply closet, they found binoculars and a set of walkie-talkies. Lana felt these were all she needed.
This way, I can watch you from 100 yards back and give you all my helpful advice.
What advice are you going to give me when I'm inside and you can't see what's going on?
Well, that's why you have your walkie-talkie, to give me all the juicy details.
Clark would be completely impervious to the rats and had seen threats far worse, but he was hesitant as he swung the storage shed doors wide open and began pulling out shredded boxes. Over the walkie-talkie, Lana asked him the same set of questions with each box.
What's in it? Is there any poop in that one? Any dead rats? Make sure there are no babies.
After a few uneventful minutes, while tugging on a tattered curtain, Clark unleashed a flood of rats running out all at once. As they scurried in every direction around his feet, he heard Lana scream from where she sat, perched in a distant tree. Clark called to her on his walkie-talkie.
Are you okay? Over.
After a brief pause, she answered.
Just be sure to shake the poop out of the curtain, and look out for any dead rats. Over.
When Clark was sure the shed was clear, Lana climbed out of her tree and the two of them assessed the damage. The rats weren't the worst cause of dilapidation, but they were the smelliest. While Clark had been pulling everything out of the shed and describing the contents of the boxes, Lana had written out a list of all the supplies and noted their condition. Once they packed it all back into the shed, they decided to have their next meeting at Lana's apartment, over tea. When she offered to give him a ride, Clark reminded her he could easily fly over in a few seconds.
As convenient as that sounds, I don't want anyone asking why Superman was on my roof.
Clark agreed to walk the last stretch and called it a compromise. She was living outside of Smallville in a tiny studio apartment. As compact as her space was, she decorated it in the most charming manner, reminding Clark of her enchanted childhood bedroom where they had their imaginary tea parties.
What kind of tea can I get for you?
I'll just have whatever you're having. I doubt it'll top the tea you used to serve when we were little.
Nothing ever does. Imaginary tea is tough to beat.
Before the two of them got to talking about the Harvest Ball, they fell back into reminiscing. Eventually, their conversation came around to Clark's life as Superman. Over the years, he had always kept Jonathan and Martha appraised of his adventures. This was the first time he had a fresh captive audience imploring him for details. Lana was eager to hear more, never running out of astute questions.
You don't sound like you think Luther accepted your apology, do you?
I can't say for sure, but what do you think?
Well, I don't think forgiving anyone is something we just do once and it's done. It seems to me to be the kind of thing you gotta do every day. Multiple times a day, even.
That makes sense, I guess.
I can't say for sure if he's forgiven you, but judging by his actions, it seems like he has so far. Maybe it'll be an ongoing trend.
Honestly, Luther leaving the Justice League alone is enough forgiveness for me. I don't know what that means about him and I, but at least I got them out of it.
But what'll we do if the world needs Superman?
The world already does. Who else could have cleared out that storage shed?
Very funny. Do you have a superpower for getting the smell out of it all?
Actually, I was thinking of asking Mr. Terrific and the Atom to help me with that.
Aren't they busy saving the world?
I don't think they mind offering a hand. After all, they're living in my family's palace.
Your fortress of solitude?
Lana giggled. Clark smiled at her amusement.
Yeah, that's the one.
That evening, at the Fortress of Solitude in the Arctic, when Superman arrived carrying the entire shed, along with its foundation, Ray Palmer met him in the hangar bay. He was excited to explore any new curiosity.
Nah, you don't even need to thank me. I always need another side project. This should be fun.
Say, Ray, any chance you could start with cleaning the shed itself? I've got to put it back tonight before anyone notices it's gone.
No worries. I should probably have it all done in a few hours. Will that do?
All of it.
Oh, sure. I'll hop to it now.
Ray shrunk the shed, placed it in a capsule in his belt, and walked with Clark to the laboratory he had set up in the fortress. Walking into the large auditorium-sized space, Ray called out to Mr. Terrific.
Hey, Michael, grab some gloves. We have a science project.
Michael Holt, a.k.a. Mr. Terrific, sat at his workstation along with Kid Flash and Nightwing. Michael clapped, snapped, and pointed his index finger shooting at Ray.
Yeah, go ahead and start without me.
The three of them waved Clark over to join them. Clark was happy to see his friends again.
Hey, Wally, how did your Android thing go the other day?
Michael Holt smiled, giving a wink to the others.
We were just discussing that Android, actually. It's proven to be unusually adaptive. Blends in wherever it goes, or something like that.
Clark looked at Kid Flash, raising an eyebrow.
So, you weren't able to stop it?
Wally blurted in exasperation.
We haven't even seen it.
How do you know it's an android?
Richard Grayson, Nightwing, fielded this question. We have security footage, and Floyd Lawton saw it, though the thing also saw Lawton and put him in critical condition.
Lawton? Like, Deadshot? Floyd Lawton? The assassin?
Nightwing shrugged. Yeah, we've worked with Floyd a few times now. We've worked with all of the Argus League, actually.
Argus League?
Wally gave a light, jovial nudge.
Do you like it? I thought of it myself.
Funny, Wally.
Clark gave him a thumbs up and a wink before turning back to the others.
Do we know where the android came from? Or what it's up to?
Mr. Terrific handed Clark a tablet displaying a map.
It's traveling the country stealing supplies, but erratically. Moving back and forth between East Coast factories and West Coast labs, whatever. There's no pattern. We don't know what it's doing with the supplies, and we have no idea what it'll steal next. By the time we get to the scene, Amazo seems to have vanished.
Amazo? You named it Amazo?
Michael turned to his array of monitors and pulled onto the screen what few specs he had on the android.
Actually, Arthur Ivo named it. Officially, it's his androidal metal adaptive zenith organism. He was planning on transferring his consciousness into this thing, but died before it was fully ready.
So this was among the androids we confiscated from his compound?
Not just among them. This was the prize of his collection.
How did it get out? How did it activate?
The other three slowly looked at one another and turned back to Clark. Grimacing, Mr. Terrific answered Clark's question with another question.
Do you want to guess?
Clark's brow lowered as he grumbled.
Luther.
Nightwing jumped in to explain. Lex woke him up to fight you during the war, but the thing just stared at him and walked away. Wally added, Luther swears he hasn't seen it since.
You're working with Luther?
Again, Nightwing shrugged.
Not really. The Argus League told us this stuff. Stuart's still working with them. But we made a truce. We're getting along. For now.
Clark recoiled inside at the idea.
That's only because I'm not around. I should probably stay out of this. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sure you can handle it. You better work on it without me.
Mr. Terrific looked at Nightwing with the smallest knowing smirk.
I told you.
Nightwing implored Clark to stick around.
Oh, come on. It's not like Luther will know if you talk about him.
Clark sighed.
It's better I not get involved where Luther is concerned. If you really need me, you can always call for my help. But it's better if I step back in the meantime.
Mr. Terrific offered some consolation.
Don't even trip, Superman. I totally told Dick this would happen. I knew you'd want to help, and I knew you'd recuse yourself the second you heard Luther started this nonsense. It's all good. You do what you gotta do.
Clark left them to work and went to the Arboretum on the other side of the fortress. After waiting out his time there, he checked in on Ray's progress. Ray had completely removed the odors and stains in the decorations and was moving on to experimenting on them. One of the curtains appeared to have had its loose threads expanded in size into massive cords of fiber. Their color varied and shifted as they unwound and unspooled in tendrils all over the place.
Ray, what did you do?
Don't worry, this is only a replica. You still have your raggedy old tattered curtains intact. And they smell great, too. I tried to grow some replacement curtains for you, but I still have to refine the process.
Thanks, Ray. I do appreciate the effort. The way things are going, this doesn't look too bad. Maybe we can use it for decorations.
Really? Because I have three more just like it. I don't know if they'll all fit in your little shed here, but I could probably rig the shed to be a smidge bigger on the inside if you want.
Ray finished packing everything back into the shed, all smelling fresh as promised. Shedding it closed, he shrunk the whole thing down, put it in a tiny capsule, and handed it to Clark.
Just place this where the shed goes. Stand back and clap three times. Voila. Instant shed.
Seriously, Ray, I can't thank you enough.
No thanks needed. Had a great time. I'm thinking my new anti-odor nanites are going to be pretty handy.
Back in Smallville, Clark returned the shed to its spot before sunrise. That afternoon, he and Lana had plans to meet at the storage shed and sort through the now clean decorations. When they arrived, they found the doors to the shed had been blown off their hinges as a giant rainbow of tendrils had burst out, sprawling in front of the shed. They appeared to still be slowly growing. Clark ushered Lana away for safety, explaining to her what they were seeing. These were the curtains Ray had replicated. They were going to need Palmer's help. In front of her, Clark transformed into Superman. It was the first time she had seen him in this form up close. Lana gasped at the transformation, but her face soon softened into a smile. Clark smiled back, then leapt into the sky. He soon found Ray in the hangar bay at the Fortress of Solitude, organizing his capsule collection, piles of storage containers of different sizes spread about, stacked and containing one another. Clark rushed in, not waiting a moment to explain.
Hey, Ray, I've got a bit of a situation. Those curtains you duplicated, they're still growing.
Ray jumped to his feet.
Ah, shoot. I must have not cured them properly before I shrank them. Once you expanded that capsule, I probably reactivated the nanites. Hold on a sec, I got just the thing.
Ray turned back to the various storage units he was sorting. He picked an indistinguishable shoebox-sized container from among them, shrank the box into a capsule, and Clark flew him back to Smallville. They arrived to find Ray's nanite-replicated curtains sprawling out into the yard behind the community center. As Ray got to work containing his science experiment,
Lana peeked out from behind a nearby dumpster.
That was quick. You must be Ray. Thanks for coming down in a hurry.
Ray gave a double take at Lana. He looked back and forth between her and Superman before smiling and raising his eyebrows at Clark. He winked at his friend, then looked back at Lana.
No problem, little lady. And you are?
Clark blushed in the presence of Ray's facial antics, stumbling on his words.
Ray. This is Lana. Lana Lang. We grew up together.
Ray eagerly shook her hand with a little bow.
Pleasure to meet you, Lana.
Without missing a beat, he went straight to business.
Before I fix the molecules in place, do you want me to change the colors at all?
Lana stumbled through answering such a unique question.
No thanks. They're, fine the way they are.
Fantastic. Less work for me. Right?
When Ray finished, Clark flew him back to the Fortress of Solitude. Returning to the Smallville Community Center, he transformed into Clark Kent and went looking for Lana. He found her still by the storage shed, wrapping herself in the colorful corded fibers strewn about.
Clark, whatever this is, it feels amazing. Here, help me carry it all inside.
The supplies, once loaded into the auditorium, took up far more space than they appeared to when packed inside the shed. There were so many broken odds and ends, Clark doubted they could do anything more than make piles of rubbish and hope it passed off as decorations. Lana saw nothing but potential.
Half the tablecloths have big holes in them. We can overlap those. If we rake up some leaves, we can scatter them around the tables to help the little holes blend in. And oh, Clark, how about we hang some of those soft, ropey curtains above the entrance? That way folks get a walk through them when they arrive and it'll be the softest thing their faces have ever touched.
Over the next several days, they gathered the rest of the supplies from around the community center. Tables, chairs, speakers, an amplifier, and a couple tall ladders. In that time, they met in the evenings to craft paper chains and build paper lanterns. At the end of the week, Lana and Mrs. Siegel drove to the big grocery store in the neighboring town for snacks and drinks for the harvest ball. Clark stayed behind to rake up leaves and look for what Lana called interesting branches. The morning before the ball, Clark and Lana arrived at the community center early, just after sunrise, to meet a local farmer delivering apples and fresh cider for the event. Lana spent the night before preparing a giant pot of caramel. For the first part of the morning, she and Clark pierced the apples onto skewers and dipped them into the gooey, sugary vat. As they worked, they discussed their game plan for hanging the assorted decorations. Lana took the initiative in envisioning the ball.
We should start by setting the tallest ladder in that corner.
Do we really need the ladder? I can just fly up to the ceiling.
And what if Mrs. Siegel walks in? What are we supposed to tell her then, Clark?
How about you stand guard on the lookout?
I guess that does sound a lot easier. Clark? Clark, are you listening?
Clark had zoned out. He was not listening. John Jones was contacting him telepathically for the first time in many weeks. Clark motioned to Lana that he was taking a call of sorts.
Kal-El. Can you hear me?
Yes, John. What's going on?
It's about the android, Amazo.
Do you need my help?
Quite the opposite. We have learned the android's secret. It possesses the ability to acquire the powers of anyone it looks upon. We need you to stay out of sight. It has already acquired many of our powers. We can't afford to let Amazo see you.
Clark snapped out of his trance and broke this peculiar news to Lana, first explaining Martian Manhunter's telepathic ability, then breaking down the contents of the message.
Hold on now. You're telling me you're stuck in here?
Looks like it.
Well, in that case, I don't mean to say I told you so, but we might as well move the tallest ladder into the corner and start from there. It sounds like we could be here all day.
Clark happily took Lana's advice. She was proven right about the ladder. A few minutes into their progress, Mrs. Siegel entered the auditorium through a door that Clark had assumed was a closet. She surely would have caught him off guard had he been decorating as Superman. Once the curtains were hung, the two of them connected the many paper chains they had been constructing all week. While they busied themselves, they discussed their plans for the evening. Clark called Kara to warn her about Amazo. She was disappointed to think that she wouldn't make it to the ball, but Lana had a plan.
I'll drive over to the farm before the ball starts and wrap her in a big blanket so Amazo don't see her. I have to pick up a few things from my parents' house anyway.
Are you finally starting to go around there again?
Yeah, I sneak by there every now and then. I'm not too sure how I got so caught up in my head thinking Ted was coming to find me. It's been a month now and he hasn't shown up, so I'm starting to think maybe...
Clark lost focus on Lana speaking as John Jones telepathically contacted him again to warn him that the android had defeated most of the Justice League. The Martian Manhunter was, in that moment, preparing to face Amazo. Clark feared for his friends.
Do you need me?
No. You must stay away. We cannot let him gain your powers.
Lana saw Clark's face grow concerned and trailed off speaking. When he looked back to her, she asked,
Was that your Martian man friend?
It was. Here, it looks like we're about ready to hang these. Go look out for Mrs. Siegel for me. I'll fly around and drape them.
Okay, but do it like I told you.
Clark dashed about, hanging the garlands and lanterns as Lana had instructed. After the decorations were in place, he stood back and took it all in. Lana's plan had transformed the space. She had even used the broken things from the storage shed in creative displays alongside the sticks and leaves they had gathered. These final touches had completed her vision. As he admired their work, Clark received another message from John Jones.
Kal-El, I am sorry. I could not stop him. He is searching for you now.
Realizing trouble was coming to Smallville, Clark closed his eyes and listened to the wind. He could hear it stirring throughout the world and being ripped apart as Amazo tore around the globe looking for Superman, seeking his power. Clark turned to Lana as she came back into the auditorium after distracting Mrs. Siegel. Lana looked around in wonder, taking in the final effect of their decorations. Her gaze scanning the room finally landed on Clark. She saw the expression on his face and knew something was wrong. Clark gave her a smile.
I'm gonna step outside.
But aren't you supposed to stay out of sight?
Clark could hear Amazo closing in.
We're gonna have to adapt that plan. Hopefully, this goes well.
Seconds after he walked out of the Smallville Community Center, Clark could see the android on the horizon, barreling upon him. He wondered what this poor creature had been through. What had brought it to the point where it sought to fight and hurt everyone it came upon? Clark walked into the empty field near the storage shed. He wanted to get some distance between himself and the buildings, just in case. Should Amazo gain his own powers, as well as those of the rest of the Justice League, Clark didn't see any chance in defeating him in a fight. The android gradually slowed its approach until it gently landed a couple dozen meters from Clark. Its skin glistened with silver and had virtually no distinguishing features, only a pair of staring eyes. Clark had not bothered to transform into Superman, yet Amazo recognized him. He had assimilated John Jones' telepathic powers into his own. The two of them stood in silence facing one another until Clark asked,
Howdy. Can I help you, friend?
Amazo tilted his head. Clark heard the android speak telepathically into his mind.
Help me? Do I look like I need help?
Clark responded out loud, skipping the telepathy. They were within speaking distance.
Well, yeah, sorta.
Amazo looked over the community center and back to Clark. Again, the android spoke directly into his mind.
You are the Superman, correct?
Clark nodded. Amazo began to transform. He took on the appearance of Deadshot, and then that of Green Lantern. He shuffled through the many forms of all of the Argus agents and Justice League members he had defeated. Finally, he settled on the image of Superman. Amazo spoke out loud.
With all of this power, why a harvest ball? Excuse me? Your powers are beyond anything I have ever seen. And you are making a harvest ball. Why?
Clark looked at the community center, then back to Amazo. He shrugged.
I don't know. Sometimes being powerful is just about knowing where you're needed.
Amazo heard these words and looked down at his own feet. He stared at the ground a long moment before raising his head with bewilderment. Looking all around, he took the world in with new eyes, as though he suddenly did not recognize where he was. Finally, his gaze returned to Clark.
You are indeed correct. I must find where I am needed.
Thank you, son of El. You will be well remembered.
Amazo looked up a moment before streaking skyward,
straight off the planet and enveloping in the sparks of the Speed Force as he disappeared. Clark took a moment to appreciate the beautiful autumn day while he telepathically reached out to Jean Jones to inform him that Amazo was gone. Jean was baffled.
Gone? How?
We talked, and then he just left Earth altogether. Are you okay, Jean? Do you need my help?
There was a pause before Jean Jones answered.
We will be all right, Kal-El. Thank you.
When Clark got back inside the community center, Lana had already begun setting out the buffet for the evening. She looked up to Clark as he came through the door.
Everything all right then?
Yeah, it mostly fixed itself.
I wish those speakers would fix themselves. I couldn't figure them out. Are you any good with that sort of thing?
Upon getting the music going, Clark joined Lana at the tables to help set out the food and drinks. Just then, Kara and Martha walked in, carrying boxes. Looking at the decorations, Kara declared,
"Oh, wow! This looks amazing!"
Lana stopped what she was doing to cross the room and meet them halfway, relieving Martha of her load.
"That was fast. Were you waiting with the car running when I called?"
Clark looked at the three of them. "When did you call them?"
"While you were talking to the android man. It seemed safe enough for you. And since I didn't know how long you'd be, I called them to bring some things from my parents' house."
All of them got to work setting up the last details of the harvest ball. Among the things Martha and Kara had fetched from the Langs was a hot plate and a large pot to heat the apple cider. Lana bounced to the music as she worked.
"I can't wait to start dancing."
Clark smiled.
"Aren't you already dancing?"
"Oh, don't be silly, Clark."
Kara laughed.
"Oh, he isn't being silly. He doesn't dance. He's super boring, man."
Kara cracked up at her own joke. Clark blushed and was sure Lana had noticed, but she didn't press the matter. Instead, she changed the subject.
"Hey, Kara, honey, would you look under the table for the box full of cups and start setting them out?"
Clark helped Kara set out the array of mismatched mugs the community center had for the occasion. While they worked, he caught Lana's eye. She said nothing, but gave him a little wink. Clark felt less embarrassed, but was unsure what Lana meant by her wink. Did she intend for him to dance? They had barely enough time to heat up the cider before families with small children began arriving. Within minutes, kids were running about and lining up for cider. To be sure none of them were burnt by the hot plate, Clark ladled them each a mug. As the night picked up, Clark and Lana barely saw each other. They stayed constantly busy, Clark serving up cups of cider, while Lana greeted guests and played the role of hostess. After ladling mugs of hot cider for a young couple, Clark looked up to make eye contact with Alex Peterson, the former bully who used to pick on Petey when they were children. He was the boy Clark had maimed, now a grown man and father. Alex had his son and daughter with him, about 5 and 2 years old. Kneeling next to his children, quietly talking, they waited their turn for cider.
"It's good to see you, Clark. I'd like to introduce you to my kids. This is my son, Robert, and my daughter. Her name is Clara. Kids, this here is Clark Kent. He's a real good man."
"It's good to see you too, Alex. Can I get y'all some hot apple cider?"
"If you have any small mugs for this little guy, I'd appreciate that. And you can get 2 mugs for their mom and I, and Claire can sip off of ours."
As Clark handed them their drinks, Alex stopped and held eye contact.
"Thanks, Clark. I mean it. Thanks for all you do. And thanks for taking over the harvest ball this year. My ma's been having a hard time getting this together, and this year, it was just too much."
"Oh, my pleasure, Alex. I'm happy to help."
They exchanged smiles and Clark went back to serving the next couple in line. The cider line persisted throughout most of the night, only breaking briefly enough to give Clark time to refill the cider pot when needed. When Clark returned with full jugs, 2 men approached him. Pete had brought Drew to the ball. Pete gestured at Clark, pointing with double fingers and miming gunfire with both hands.
"There he is, the man of the hour. How you doing, Clark? You and Lana really worked a miracle tonight. This place looks amazing. Clark, how did you do this?"
I don't know. I just put everything where Lana told me. I take it you must be Drew."
Pete's partner blushed.
Oh my god, he noticed me. I'm gonna faint.
Clark leaned toward Pete and whispered,
You haven't been telling people, have you?
Pete's eyes became wide and his jaw dropped.
What? No, no, I only told Drew.
Drew, a stout bearded fellow, gave Clark a bashful wave. Clark returned the gesture, then turned back to Pete.
I spoke to Alex Peterson earlier, and the way he was talking made me wonder.
Oh, Alex, I'm pretty sure he started that rumor years ago. I don't think he ever stopped believing otherwise. But I wouldn't worry about it. Peterson's a good guy.
The three of them chit-chatted for a few minutes until the cider line formed once again. Clark went back to work while Pete and Drew took to the dance floor. Eventually, everyone who wanted a hot cup of cider had gotten their fill, leaving Clark free to spectate on the people of Smallville as they enjoyed the party. Throughout the evening, nearly everyone in Smallville had come to the Harvest Ball, even if only to stop by for a little bit. Mrs. Siegel came around for cider and gave Clark a surprisingly big hug for a little old lady as tiny as she was. As the crowd began to die down, Lana managed to dance a few songs with Pete and Drew. While Clark looked on, Carol walked over and stood beside him.
Are you just going to watch?
What? Someone might need hot cider.
Clark, the kids are all gone. These people can serve their own cider.
All right, I guess I can take a break. I'm gonna have a little snack.
Snacks? Really?
What? It's been a long day.
Martha came over looking for the two cousins.
Kara, honey, I'm gonna need you to drive this here old lady home. I am beat. I'm sorry, Clark, I can't stay any longer. This day has had the best of me. You did a beautiful job. You should be so proud. These decorations are absolutely incredible. I cannot believe what you two did with the place.
The two of them left Clark to eat olives and cheese as he watched from the side, until only the stragglers scattered the dance floor. Lana had managed to say goodnight to everyone personally. With only a handful of partygoers left, she came to find Clark by the buffet table.
Hey, Clark, can you help me with something?
Sure. What is it?
I think some of the curtains are misaligned, and it really isn't a big deal, but it's been bugging me all night, and I just wanted to get another pair of eyes on them.
Oh, well, all right. Which curtains?
You have to see it from a certain angle. Here, I'll show you. Follow me.
Lana led Clark toward the middle of the room and faced him toward the back wall of the auditorium. She stood in front of him, looking down at his feet. Shuffling, the two of them moved slightly to the side to find the precise position.
There, do you see it?
Clark squinted and looked at the curtains. They were all tattered, and none of them really looked particularly aligned.
I'm not sure if I do.
Maybe we're in the wrong spot. Lean over onto 1 foot a bit. Do you see it now?
Nah, I don't think so.
Here, try the other foot. How about now?
Not really.
Try moving back to that foot again. Maybe I was moving a little bit when I noticed.
Clark moved back from 1 foot to the other. Swaying, he studied the wall in an effort to make out whatever it was that Lana was trying to show him. Rocking along with him, Lana looked up into Clark's face as he observed the wall behind her. He squinted in an effort to help.
I don't know if I see anything.
Huh, that's strange. Maybe it was nothing.
Clark looked down into her eyes. Lana kept them swaying. He saw something wry behind her smile.
What is it?
I don't want to scare you, Clark, but I think we might be dancing.
Clark smiled as they slowly moved back and forth to the music.
Is that what this is?
I would call it dancing.
Well then, now that you mention it, I do think those curtains might be slightly misaligned.
The two of them swayed together until everyone had said goodnight and left through the draped doorway. As they danced, Lana looked up to Clark.
I just want to let you know that you did an amazing job today.
Clark blushed.
You did an amazing job.
No, I mean when the robot man came. I don't imagine that would have been easy for anyone.
I thought you barely noticed.
Oh, I noticed. I just didn't think you needed me making a fuss. But I think you were just marvelous out there.
What was marvelous were these decorations. Everybody I talked to couldn't stop raving about them.
They really liked it, didn't they, Clark? Oh, this day couldn't have gone more perfect, don't you think?
Lana gazed up at Clark, her eyes refracting the lanterns all around them. They slowly swayed together, smiling into each other's eyes. Clark knew that this time, if it was going to happen, it would be up to him. He rose a hand gently to Lana's cheek, leaned in, and kissed her. Their first kiss, as teenagers, had felt like an eternity. This time, it was punctuated by the last song on the playlist ending. Lana slowly drew away, trembling, her eyes moist. Thank you for listening. I'm Isaac Bluefoot. Book 2 of Superman Son of El is written and independently produced by myself. It means so much to me to share this story with you. Thank you so much for joining me. This is entirely a passion project, and trust me when I say from experience that passion can be taxing, especially without support. I really can't seem to stop myself from doing this. It's like a compulsion. So I am so grateful to every one of my patrons. It's only a handful of you at this point, but knowing you believe in me means a lot. I understand not everyone's in a position to give, but I really like to at least encourage you to talk about the show and share it with people and maybe even bring yourself to rate and review it. Again, these little things feed my spirit. So like I said, I really appreciate you being part of this, even if it's just listening. This story was inspired by the Superman and DC Comics and characters originally created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, with additional contributions by Bill Finger, John Sakella, Julius Schwartz, Gardner Fox, Gil Kane, John Ostrander, Tom Mandrake, Bill Finger, Bob Kane, John Broom, Carmine Infantino, Mike Sikowski, David Vern Reed, Lou Sayers Schwartz, Joseph Samuelson, Joe Serta, Mort Weisinger, and George Papp. Music in this episode was made by Poddington Bear, Plurabelle, Blue Dot Sessions, Roger Plexico, Sergey Quadrado, Chad Crouch, Kai Engel, Evan Schaefer, Lundstrom, Vortex, and Lasers. See the episode notes for details, and be sure to listen to the next episode, Chapter 3, Natural Order.